Hey guys, welcome to MAU Talk, a new podcast from MAU Vegas, the premier mobile acquisition and retention summit. On today's episode, Adam speaks with Ian Simons, head of industry for e-commerce at Facebook, and Jack Dempsey Sutherland III, manager of client measurement for e-commerce at Facebook, where they discuss what advertisers, from the most sophisticated to those just getting started, need to know about value-based marketing and discovery commerce. Take it away, Adam.
Okay, Ian, Jack, welcome to the podcast. Before we get into it, it would be awesome if you guys could do little intros and maybe Ian, you could get started.
Yeah, awesome. Adam, well, thank you for having us. Really, really appreciate it. So I lead the e-commerce advertising business at Facebook. My background is really seeing this ecosystem from a lot of platforms and even the agency side. So I've worked at Google and their properties like YouTube. I was an early employee at Pinterest, as well as, you know, Facebook properties. And then I spent some time at Digitas as well way back in the day. So I've definitely seen this ecosystem and landscape from a lot of different angles, which has helped me over time, and really appreciate you having us. So thank you.
My pleasure. Okay, Jack, your turn.
All right. So Adam, thank you for having us here. Again, I'm Jack Dempsey Sutherland III, and I lead measurement for e-commerce at Facebook. Prior to Facebook, I spent my time on the agency side, later moving over to digital and ultimately working in programmatic and ad tech. Today, I lead the e-commerce team, and we're working with our marketers on helping them to drive better measurement and better marketing. It's great to be here. Before Ian and I get into it, I just want to make sure we thank the cross-functional teams around the globe who've contributed to this research and this work. And we hope it's incremental, and it more importantly adds value to the conversation of your listeners and audience.
Okay, awesome. So we're going to talk about this quote-unquote value-based marketing concept and this discovery marketing concept that you guys want to introduce. Before we get into that, I got to ask, from your perspective, since you work across so many clients, so many campaigns, so many advertisers, what are best-in-class advertisers doing right now? And across the board, creative, target, whatever, like, what does it mean to be best-in-class on the platform today?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have to start off by talking about the recent events in COVID. Sure. So COVID has shocked the system in such a big way. We are looking, you know, when you look across all the industries here at Facebook, e-commerce has taken a massive step forward. And we're seeing first-time buyers, we're seeing older buyers, and then we're seeing really two sets of kind of clients or companies. Businesses that are really ready and have been investing in this D2C mobile first e-commerce space, and those that are just so far from being ready. And so there is this quote from Winston Churchill that I think about often, which is, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. And I really believe that whether you're ready or you're not ready, now is the time to shake it up. So broadly speaking, I see two kind of trends that are going on, and we're going to talk a little bit about both of these and go deeper in value-based marketing. But the two trends are, first, this notion of discovery commerce. And discovery commerce really is the idea that machine learning is so good right now that products are finding people versus the other way around, of people finding products. In the olden days of Facebook, you'd set up campaigns that were so hyper-targeted to specific audiences, and often these campaigns targeted audiences that were quote-unquote in market for your products. And this notion has flipped on its head. And the best, I'm going to unpack, you know, how do you do discovery commerce really well, but the best advertisers understand this notion of demand generation, discovery commerce. They're really leading into that. The second step, and this is where the more sophisticated advertisers are really testing the waters right now, is this concept of value-based marketing. And at its simplest form, value-based marketing means that a small number of customers are driving a lot of value for your business. And the businesses that understand this concept, that are executing against this concept, are growing quickly, and they're growing actually profitably. They're not letting marketing expenses get out of control. In fact, they're putting their marketing expenses to work in a really, really smart way. And so I'll give you a really simple example of this. A few years ago, as on Instagram, I was not a skier, but I was served an ad for skis, and it was an awesome creative that stopped me in my tracks, and it made me think, you know, I'm spending so much time looking at screens and sitting inside, it's time to get outside, right? And so I clicked on my phone, and I bought these skis, and this particular brand did a really good job over time, and this is the value piece, of outfitting me for this hobby. And then even providing me with things like ski tickets, et cetera, like getting me to the mountain, right? The ski experiences. So it wasn't just about introducing me to the brand through the skis, this discovery commerce. It was also about nurturing the relationship with me and turning me into a high value customer. And that's hard to do in practice, but this brand did it very well.
Okay. So what does it mean to be doing that?
Totally. And I know this is a sophisticated audience that's listening to this. And many will say, you know, I'm totally doing this. And this sounds really basic, this notion of discovery commerce. But getting this right, it's harder than you think. And I think everybody is on a spectrum of their journey to really mastering this. It breaks into three components. The first component is machine learning. So again, it's no longer restricting your campaigns to really specific demographics or interest profiles. It's not hyper segmenting your audience. Again, think about the skiing example. That's what we're talking about here on machine learning. The second is about creative. And you know, when I moved to Facebook, I really underestimated, honestly, the value of creative. And mobile first creative contributes in all our studies 56% of sales lift. So not brand lift, but sales lift is in this creative. And so what we see folks doing in this space is doing a few things. If they're not iterating quickly enough, they're using Facebook marketing partners to supplement their own efforts. It's not about big fancy studios anymore. They're even leaning into dynamic ads. So even with smaller catalogs, they're thinking about ways to use dynamic ads effectively. That's a very effective format that we have to customize and personalize creative. And then the last and arguably maybe the most important part of this is really thinking about your user experience and specifically your checkout flow. And when we look in all our research, it shows that right now in today's day and age, there's something like $235 billion of opportunity costs, which is actually growing year on year, that is lost just to due to bad checkout experiences, confusing, many, many steps. And what does good look like? Well, good looks like, you know, checkout in 5 taps or less. And again, this sounds basic when we think about machine learning and creative and user experience, but those that are really nailing discovery commerce, they're doing all three of these very, very well. And it's having a really meaningful impact in terms of their ability to grow their business.
You know, I'll give you a little anecdote, real anecdote. I was getting my wife a present, Shopify site, I won't name them. I use their integrated payment option, PayPal. I made a successful PayPal transaction and then nothing happened. So like $80 to $89 went out of my account. I wrote them an email. They're like, we have no record of your order. And I was like, okay, well, I think your PayPal integration is broken. And they're like, okay, well, we'll look at that, I guess. So like, I think it's that's a big one. Like, it's so easy, especially when you work in one of these companies, to get kind of disconnected from the actual front end experience that people are seeing, because so many devices, you're in the Instagram like little wrapper browser thing. Like, this stuff breaks very regularly. So yeah, I think that's an excellent, excellent point. Okay. So we understand this discovery commerce premise, and I suspect that much of our audience is very familiar with this kind of new a performance creative kind of agency articulation, which has popped up a lot in the last couple of years. So the second bit of your kind of macro hypothesis is around value-based marketing. The lazy amongst us, myself included, would say, well, yeah, don't optimize for purchase, optimize for value at the ad set level, walk away. But I presume that you think there's more to it than that. So what, when you're saying, yeah, like when you're saying value, like what are we, how does that get involved with this discovery commerce notion?
Yeah. So I think discovery commerce is, it's the basics. It's where we start. The next is this notion of value-based marketing. And what I would say is it's more than just an optimization tactic. And what we'll be coming out with in the weeks to come, and then even more formally at Facebook, is this kind of grid that's going to look across a number of dimensions that shows how do you mature your company holistically from a marketing perspective, from when you're an earlier state company and looking at things like traffic, right, or conversion volume, to being really tip of spear where you're considering the differentials in lifetime value of your customers. And so there really is this arc of sophistication, and this arc of sophistication stretches across three different areas that we're going to go into in this material, which is first really stating your business need. And this evolves over time, and then ensuring you have the right foundational element. So it's more than value optimization. It's what signals specifically are you passing to us, or what information are you passing to the algorithms? What ad tech and integrations do you have with the platforms to pass these signals? What analytical capabilities and insights do you have that then feeds into those signals and that ad tech? And then how do you operationalize your strategy with the targeting, optimization, and bidding decisions that you're making to operationalize the strategy? But it starts with a stated business need. And again, this seems basic, but this evolves over time. And it starts with a startup saying, you know, I want as many conversions as possible. This is where a lot of advertisers stay, is just in this just volume of conversion lands. But then what we see when we look at potentially the public companies that I work with, or even the most sophisticated public companies that have really driven outsized value, they start to pivot to their goals being, you know, I want to maximize revenue divided by cost or ROAS. These again are the more sophisticated accounts. And then when you see the really sophisticated guys, they start looking at how do we find the whales, the really high LTV customers, and then what are the impact of those whales over time on my business? And that is a real differentiator. And we see this transition as these companies get bigger and bigger and bigger and more sophisticated. They actually have to get more specific about their marketing goals, and much more specific and intentional about the signals and how they're structuring everything under the surface.
Great. All right, Jack, let's hear it. So we understand theory. So what do we actually do?
So in terms of setting the foundation, I think Ian did a really great job of sort of laying out the actual vision of an end-to-end user experience and how marketers can add value and grow a customer at each stage of that customer lifecycle journey. But when we start with the foundation, there are sometimes we see marketers who shift a little too far to the right and try to get to LTV and ROAS. And we need to recognize that obviously we're operating in the real world. There are a lot of challenges, and there's the day-to-day business. And so it's more of an evolution versus a revolution. And it's about meeting marketers where they are and going at the speed of the business. So when I set the foundation, when we think about setting the foundation, we want to start with the technical prerequisites. What do we need to have in place in order to do proper measurement and marketing focusing on LTV and value? What are the signals? What is the ad tech? What data and analytics do we need to help us understand, attribute, and more importantly, assess the performance here. And so once we get the right data in place, it's about setting those realistic expectations. My team's client measurement, marketing science, and we work very closely with Ian and his team and helping clients set the right expectations at each step in the journey or each stage in the journey and identify existing gaps. Where might there be potential barriers and how can we sort of push through those to continue to test, learn, deploy, and evolve? So when I think about the Signals Foundation, because it's so important, I want to give you guys some examples of what we're seeing from different marketers who are utilizing signals towards focusing on value. First one, when we look at ROAS, marketers that are using the value, assessing the value of sort of add to cart or purchase, are there certain site behaviors that are indicative of a high or potential low value user? And how can I use that to help drive decisioning and more importantly, improve my performance and reach my target goals? When we look at LTV, and obviously we'll talk more about that later, but our more advanced, and I would say mid clients are what I would call the handoff. And it is about an ecosystem where they're passing predictable lifetime value signals to us via server-to-server integrations. And that data is being used to help inform targeting, bidding, optimization, and more importantly, measurement. So it is that what I would refer to as the handoff and the passing that allows us to really drive that business and focus on the most important metric that the client knows very well. And the last piece would be subscription-based companies. They're starting to break down signals and pass us signals across a number of different factors, looking at seasonal subscribers, looking at an annual subscription, a type of prescription, a segment of users. The segmentation of it allows for a lot of interesting research and analysis that can help us get smarter at detecting where we can drive the most value. So it can become as complex or simple as you would like, but it's about recognizing that you need to have the right foundation in place in order to properly build up this value approach without it not tearing down. You know, at the end of the day, one bad test can set a business back. So we want to be very thoughtful in our approach.
Okay, I have one follow-up question and one anecdote.
Yeah.
Because I suspect you run into this. I'd say in my day-to-day, 50% of the people that I work with do not know the data points that are passed back with the events that have set, you know, are set, like the parameters. So like there's some value that's getting passed, but like, is it inclusive of shipping costs? I don't know. Is it inclusive of the discount costs? I don't know. Like, what is that event? I don't know. Like, what is initiate checkout in our context? So I think part of the foundation is just like literally knowing what's implemented as a start. And even people that are super sophisticated that I see will be like, oh yeah, No. The add to cart, the values associated with add to cart, those are 100x off. So just don't worry about that. I'm like, what? Like, why? What are you talking about? Okay. So there's your anecdote. And then a question. So, I mean, you start passing back value, right? Or maybe you start passing back, as you said, a PLTV, a projected lifetime value. At the end of the day, that's some number, right? Is the implication there that I'm starting to use one value optimization and potentially even like min ROAS or target ROAS, some sort of ROAS bidding? Like, is that where people end up going once they have this data being passed back typically?
It is. And I think of it from a short-term to long-term perspective. So obviously in the short term is looking more at volume conversions. But as you move across the value equation, it's thinking about it from a long-term perspective. And it's using more signals that attribute to long-term performance, like your min ROAS, like your LTV, and tying that into your optimization and targeting. So the operationalizing piece is probably very critical once the foundation's in place, because we have to think about business logic, targeting, optimization, and bidding as levers that can help you deliver your goals. Those targeting optimization choices can guide our systems and help you improve your outcomes and really tailor our buying approach based on where you see the most value for each particular users. And from a broad targeting is the shift for Facebook. The companies of the future, as Ian said, are leaning on machine learning.
You know, and I want to add something here. This is going to be my editorial. One thing that I see a lot for our clients is if you pass back revenue or you pass back a projected lifetime value or a 1 year value, it's all predicated typically in revenue terms, but not all products have the same cost structures behind them. The margins are different. And so I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Like, yeah, you know, our ROAS is blah, right? But like this stuff you sell at 90% margins and this stuff has 30% margins. Maybe actually you, in your particular context, like you want to be passing back both a top line revenue number and like a contribution dollars number. And we actually care more about contribution. Like that's a nuance that I think is often lost. In some categories, it's irrelevant, but in a lot, particularly like big e-commerce companies, that's a huge, you know, that's a huge determinant when you're thinking in this like ROAS slash efficiency term.
I think that's absolutely right. You absolutely want to be doing this. And as we break down our testing and we look at those that are kind of splitting signals or identifying the most important signals, we see really meaningful performance. And so an example of that is a subscription company that has maybe an annual product versus more of a seasonal product, they're splitting that signal and pointing people towards the annual, which is driving high LTV. You can think about that from a contribution margin perspective as well. Maybe that is the singular focus of what you want to optimize for, and you can point people to the highest contribution margin products. So I think that's really, really, really important, is this idea of kind of signal segmentation, being really specific about what you're passing and how you're optimizing using those signals.
Yeah. Okay. So practically speaking, I'm an end customer. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. Like, what does this look like from a consumer's perspective? Like, what? How is this maybe different than, you know, a conventional campaign approach?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and really important. So, you know, you can be the most analytical person, right, and look at all the math and all the signals and how we're splitting signals and how we're optimizing. But at the end of the day, if you are not thinking about your brand, why your customers shop with you, how do we find those high LTV users? What do they look like? What are the characteristics? What do they enjoy? And how do we keep them? Or the consumer experience? I think you're missing out a lot. And I'll give you a really simple example. And this happened to me this year. So we have three kids. On Friday nights, our kids love to eat burgers and milkshakes and watch a movie, right? It's nice. The weekly treat to cap the week. And, you know, we used to go and drive down the hill and go to Shake Shack or whatever to get our burger and milkshake. But then during COVID time, I was acquired by two delivery apps, right? And, you know, I'm just a CPA to these guys. But what I cared about was the fact that I had this burger and milkshake night every single Friday night. And I have three kids, so it's a big family. So when you start layering on all the additional fees, the delivery fees, everything that kind of goes into these delivery apps, it was becoming really expensive. There was one of those apps that offered me a loyalty program. It was very cheap, relatively cheap, and you paid it up front. You pay it every month, but it erases all the fees. And economically, they showed me the math of, you know, member, non-member. And I joined this program, and it sucks it like a Netflix subscription out of my account every single month. But I am now a high LTV user or a high value user for this company. And this other company totally lost me because they didn't think about what was the offer that I cared about. And that the consumer experience, what you're selling and your unique value or your superpower or whatever it is, it's so important, and it's so often ignored by the mathematicians behind all these signals.
Now, that's an excellent point. It's easy to lose touch. You stare at all this stuff through the Facebook ads dashboard, and you forget, like my mom sees the ads that we run, and she's like, oh, I saw an Urban Sunda. I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't really looked at them in the context of the actual user experience in like a long time. It's easy to get disconnected. At least I find it's very easy to get disconnected. Okay, Jack. So there's like from a consumer perspective, that's cool. So we've set the foundation. We've talked a little bit about how to operationalize, like how could you sort of maybe weave this into an acquisition strategy?
Yeah, I love it. So the acquisition strategy for Burgers and Shakes Night, Ian's example is great because it talks about the customer journey. It talks about the user experience. And it's important to recognize where your customers are in that journey. And how do you provide sort of the right marketing touch point? What is the best optimization through the lens of value? So one option is really more revenue per purchase, right? That's where we see the most growth. What are some targeting practices? What are some tests that we can run to really see if we can get more revenue per a particular purchase? And how do we measure that on the back end? So it's really about that experimentation. The other piece is how do we get higher frequency purchasers? How do we get people to buy more? How do we cross sell and upsell? And I think as you start to think about that for your particular business, you develop a matrix and you map that customer journey and determine how your acquisition strategy can be deployed for said user based on where they are. And using that data that we talked about earlier to pass back and inform decisioning. So it can get really, really interesting, but I think targeted and really derive value for both the marketer and the user.
Okay, that's cool. And I mean, I think you see a lot of focus on upsell, increasing basket size. In your day-to-day, do you see a lot of regular old price testing? Do you see that as a common lever? And sort of second part question, are you seeing strategies that are meaningful around increasing frequency? It seems like a really maybe a harder problem, but a higher more impactful thing to solve if you can solve it. Like what in your day to day, what do you encounter?
Yeah, I think the first point you make in terms of price point, I think that's an important piece in really understanding user behavior. So oftentimes our teams will work with clients to do sort of an LTV audit or an analysis and try to glean insights. This is where it gets interesting because you can determine what price points and products are most popular with users, what indicators are indicative of value, who has the potential to churn just based on what we're seeing. And so I think it really lends itself to test and learn and being able to quickly understand what's effective and what's not. When you look at the frequency, there's a lot of experimentation with frequency. We see that quite often, pun intended, because we want to understand how to strike the right balance between one, making sure Ian gets to the next level in terms of skis and his burger and Shakes Night loyalty, but not being to the point where it can lead to churn. So it's about striking the right balance. And all of these levers that you talk about, frequency and more purchase, can be utilized for testing to understand which one is more incremental and can contribute to more long-term LTV.
Okay. All right, cool. So I would argue that we've covered more or less the basics, the basic premise. So now let's say, you know, we'll talk about the more sophisticated stuff. So let's get into, like you've even touched on some of these things, but thinking in payback period terms, how to go about that. Yep. What does a PLTV setup look like? Like what is that? How are people going about that? What leverage does that give you? And anything else that you'd put in kind of the advanced class? Like what jumps out to you for a quote unquote sophisticated advertisers that are doing this stuff well, like tactically?
Yeah. So obviously they're focusing on the long term. They're leveraging their in-house models and using that data to help inform our targeting, bidding, and optimization. And it really comes down to recognizing their level of predictability can drive profitability, right? So they're going a step further. They're combining their revenue per customer information with purchase into building different LTV models. These models can be across a cohort, a particular segment, or at the user level. And that's being passed back to us via a signal. And going even further, it's assessing the different payback periods. They're really trying to determine at what point is this customer no longer longer profitable? And so is it over 90 days? Is it over a year? At what point do we recognize that we have met our return on ad spend and that we're hitting our goals and this user is becoming valuable to us? And so those are some of the things that our advanced clients are doing. They're also using LTV. You know, Ian talked about discovery. So it's not about looking at just your existing customers, but how do I grow my base? And so they're using LTV to seed audiences and find more consumers who are most profitable and high value. And they're bringing them into the funnel to continue to grow that business.
And practically speaking, we're saying is, well, you've got a bunch of custom audiences, your seed audiences, you maybe segment them by value, you're building different lookalikes, maybe based on product category, maybe based on just value in totality, and then testing into them in the hopes that a lookalike of a high value customer seed will translate to high value customers in the future. Is that, do you see that actually play out? Like, I mean, obviously, like intuitively, that would be a great outcome. Like, is that an outcome that the machine or your system is often able to achieve?
The important thing is what you're proposing is a business question. And so from our perspective, we would focus on how do we test that via measurement. And mm-hmm. So does a seed audience using LTV drive value? And how can we compare the lift and incrementality to that? So it's really about setting up a test to learn and testing business as usual and testing using seed audiences, using LTV signal to seed audiences. So I think that's how we can answer that question. And more often than not, we've seen clients see success there because it's building upon a foundation that was already of high value users.
So you sort of touched on this briefly, but like this notion of predictability, like projected LTVs as a for example, and how that ties into profitability. So practically speaking, do you have any examples of like how that, you know, might look in practice, especially relative to a more kind of vanilla, just broad targeting, no PLTV, no nothing, just, you know, optimize for CPA, call it a day.
Yeah, I would say it's being deliberate. So I'll give you an example, right? It's 2020. We're seeing a lot of consumers moving from different places sort of based on where they are. And so you look at a home goods brand. They might identify someone as a mover based on how often they've gone to the site, a particular purchase. How much are they spending in a transaction? If someone's moving, perhaps they're spending a high volume trying to furnish an apartment. And so these types of signals and behaviors happening on site and through purchasing data might lead a marketer to place this consumer into a high priority group and put them into sort of a mover specific category with a specific mover creative treatment. And so it becomes much more tailored based on the cohort that they're in. And so the PLTV model would understand current and future opportunity. So at the end of the day, we need to strike while the iron is hot, right? And so when the model picks up these signals, right, high number of purchases, site visits, going to different pages, that customer is going to be moved into this cohort. And we're going to be deliberate with our communications and our creative and trying to get them to really, what I would say, convert. And at the end of the day, purchase and meet that consumer need with the right user experience.
Okay. Awesome. So let's talk organizational structures, as that is often a big determinant of whether or not this approach could be taken. I'll give you a real client example. Talking to the CEO, he's like, "Well, we have to have a $40 CPA based on Google Analytics." And I was like, "Yeah, but you care more about efficiency, right? Like ROI, like, you know, the value, PLTV, all that stuff." He's like, "Yeah." I was like, okay, so then forget about the CPA goal. He was like, no, it has to be a $40 CPA. And I was like, what? Like, am I having this? Did you just hear me? He was like, yeah, this is how we do it. So so my question is like, why is what you guys are saying not more ubiquitous? What are the reasons? What are the challenges? Like what is the impediment that you see most often to taking this more, I guess you could call it sophisticated or just even more nuanced approach? Because that's really what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah. So I think that's a great example. And we see this a lot. And ultimately, it's very easy to do what you've always done as a company. But from an organizational perspective, what at least I see is when they're earlier on as startups, sometimes these teams can move quickly and you're meeting with the CEO and you can have these strategic dialogues. As these companies grow up, you get a lot of fragmentation in the organizational structure, which you know, hearkening back to discovery commerce and the customer experience, everything starts breaking down and companies start moving really, really slowly. So what we see our most sophisticated LTV-oriented customers doing is they build what we call agile teams, and they're typically under one leader. And that means paid marketing by channel, organic marketing, creative, media analytics, site analytics, UX design, you name it, every ad tech, analytics, it's all rolling up to one leader. This is really important because then that leader has not only a view across the whole customer experience and can kind of optimize and move resources agilely around as the company gets bigger, but this leader can also align with the CEO, the CFO, the people who really have to understand how the metrics need to change as we start getting more sophisticated about ROAS and LTV.
I think the listeners of this podcast, and certainly I, would swap agile, whatever teams, which is great, with like, that's what a growth person is, really. Like,
right.
That's the point. I mean, it's meant to be cross-functional. I think the thing's tricky about our industry, though, and this is like one of the first times I've heard anyone at Facebook or Google like articulate what like a growth person is. I get that question all the time. Like, well, what do you mean? Like, we're not hiring a director of digital marketing, we're hiring a director of growth. Why? And I'm like, well, and like that, that's nail on the head. It's like, the description I give is like, it's a cross-functional skill set. Like,
right.
Full stop. Like, that's what it is. Like, cause maybe, you know, maybe Jack's group is gonna come in and we're gonna do a bunch of post-purchase surveying, whatever, to validate blah, blah, blah. And like, that's in scope of our efforts, even if it wouldn't traditionally be like the marketing team's responsibility to go do that. So I think that's spot on. A lot of times that's like the last firewall. It's like, yeah, you know what? I'm comfortable with the growth guy doing measurement and front end development and whatever, whatever. But I still need to have a chaperone who's the head of brand or the CMO. Cause like, I don't want to do anything dumb. And that's, yeah, I think that's a big hurdle for people to like get over and or to find the right person that actually can span those areas. Like I personally would be perfectly comfortable as a head of growth at any one of these companies. I'd be horrific if I was also in charge of brand marketing because I don't know anything about it. So that's, you know, that's a hard thing to solve. Jack, do you have any thoughts on any of this organizational business?
One thing I'd offer up is focusing on the learning agenda, right? And making sure learning does not live only within the analytics team or with the head of growth, but across the organization. And how do we bring different cross-functional teams, whether it's product monetization, marketing, growth together to align around a set learning agenda that moves our business from our current state through the LTV spectrum. And so for me, it's about being in a constant state of learning, and it's about embracing testing and learning and experimentation. And I know that sounds very easy on paper, but you have to prepare your organization. Because I mentioned earlier, just being in the measurement side, we all know, and we can think back to that one test that can sometimes derail an entire initiative. And so how do you prepare your leadership, right? And your teams that failure is an opportunity to learn? And how do you build that into your test plan in a safe way that your team is constantly learning and understanding what works and doesn't work? Because we've talked about pricing, we've talked about creative, we've talked about so many different variables, but how do we in a structured way test and understand what's moving the needle? And so it's that mindset shift and it's that learning agenda or that organized central document that helps everyone from the CEO, right, to the actual on the ground teams understand how we're moving towards a more value-based marketing approach.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's spot on. Okay, so we have maybe another 10 or 15 minutes as long as we need, but we want to talk about measurement. So, okay, we know we want to be more nuance in our approach to customers. Some are higher value and some are lower. We know at a minimum, we probably want to be looking at efficiency and ROAS. So that's established. Okay. We probably want to give the machine more control. Okay. Fair enough. But we have to measure it to know what is going on, right? To know if it's working. So same kind of question, Jack, like foundation, right? Like what, like to do a good job to measure the performance of Facebook and Instagram campaigns, like what do you need?
Well, I think at the end of the day, the most important question is, does the shift to value and focusing on LTV drive higher business outcomes? Is it more profitable to my business? Is it incremental? And so our biggest focus is incrementality and how can we create a sustainable marketing approach that grows the business? And so that's the most important thing. And I think prerequisites for measurement is understanding we're having these conversations now. It's 2020 and there's a lot of opportunity in the marketplace where e-com, Ian talked about, we can never erase a good crisis, but they have to balance the short term and the long term. So again, we're going to prepare the organization to make sort of that mental shift from short term to long term, but you need measurement and detailed test plans to guide everyone and to show them that we are making step change and it's proving to be incremental. The two ways we do that, incrementality testing, understanding our attribution systems and models, and making sure incrementality is the gold standard.
Okay, that's awesome. I want to ask you, I'll put you on the spot. You may not like this question, so we may scrap it later. But like one thing I see a lot is, you know, a client creates an understanding of user value, a PLTV model. Right? Okay, great. And they can feed that back to Facebook and, you know, you could use that to optimize as we've discussed. And that's awesome. But a lot of times I find that the predictive LTV modeling business is predicated on relatively unsophisticated attribution. For example, people will say, hey, you know, my search campaigns have a projected payback period of 9 months and my display campaigns, my Facebook campaigns have a projected period of 3 months. And it's like, well, but you know, all of this stuff is kind of working together. Like there really is no prospecting customer and retargeting customer. It's like, you know, they're the result of our marketing. So I'm just curious, like, do you have a perspective on that? Do you run into that? Maybe that's just sort of solved by thinking about incrementality, as that is in effect channel, like a channel agnostic observation. Like, do you see any conflict between those two approaches, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, I think it differs by client and by industry, but I think what you get at is probably what's a big challenge in the industry, right? How do I utilize incrementality in concert with my attribution? Marketers have MMM models, they have MTA. So just trying to make sense of all of that. And I think foundationally, our best approach in terms of just thinking about it from a value perspective is really understanding at a specific channel level, what is the influence of said media in terms of outcomes.
Right, that's incrementality basically.
Yeah, and our clients will use different models. Everything is customized. You know, it's a great question. And hopefully you'll have us back to sort of unpack that. And I know we're going to sort of talk to that in our playbook, but that's on the far end of the journey. And I think a lot of our clients are actively trying to solve for that now. How to
would you
those systems.
You trigger this for me. So like people are at different stages. You guys, to your credit, have made lift testing remarkably available. I think that is the number one most impressive thing to me in the Facebook ads platform. Like that sort of lift testing in any other context, in any other channel, is either A, literally impossible, or B, you basically have to beg an account manager to ever even consider configuring such a test. And, you know, the cynic in me says, why would a source of traffic not want to enable incrementality testing? I wonder if it's because they're worried about the results. You guys are on the other end of the spectrum. You've built this product that is self-serve. It's incredible. So like when, like company size, stage-wise, when do you think that is appropriate? Like when would you start to introduce that? Is that now something that's so universal that from day one, you might as well run a quarterly incrementality test because why not? Or do you view that as more of like, you know, a varsity thing that you have to get off of junior varsity first before it's, you know, before you can do it?
would say we see Lyft as foundation, right? And at the end of the day, we want to operationalize it. You can use it whether you're early stage or late stage, because at the end of the day, how much of my marketing is working, right? How can we tie back marketing to actual business outcomes? And no matter the size of a business, that is important. I think the important thing is that Lyft has to be interpreted, and each business has to figure out, how do I incorporate these Lyft results into my business in a way that makes sense?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I believe in incrementality, and I strive for that with every dollar I spend.
Yep. Yeah, honestly, I think that's remarkable. Like that's not to be, I'm not trying to worship Facebook, but that is like, in the industry, that is a unique perspective. Like the fact that it's possible is so unique today, and you have to, I assume it's, you're going to force everybody to be able to offer that, because it's, you know, it's so critical. Anyway, Ian, do you want to weigh in on this at all, this measurement business? Yeah,
there's this notion of, you know, correlation or causation. So they break out testing control groups, and that's exactly what Lyft is, looking at not just correlation, but what is actually causing the business results. And that is Lyft. That is the ultimate equalizer across all channels in this many channel world that we live in. It's simply applying Lyft and doing it rigorously, often, and it's applying multipliers to equalize channels.
And I love this. It. I would ask, which one of us is on the measurement team? Because Ian, that was well said. And I think that's a great point, Adam. You know, when your organization has embraced incrementality and Lyft is when your non-measurement or analytics person can explain why, how, and more importantly, what it does. And I think Ian is a great testament to that.
Well, I've got one more random anecdote for you guys and for our listeners. So, you know, if you're on the buy side or even in an agency, you get a lot of inbound, right? You guys probably don't get this, but hey, do you want to run this test? So the troll move that I do to make those conversations very short is I say, yes, absolutely. I would love to run a test. I'll give you an uncapped budget. Can you describe your incrementality testing methodology? And I swear you will get either no response or people like, oh, not really sure there's a fit. Like maybe we'll circle back. Like 100% hit rate. It absolutely crushes. So there's a little troll tip for anybody out there.
Yeah, I love that. And it is so basic, but so many startups don't do any incrementality. And then the biggest thing, Jack and I work with the most sophisticated e-commerce companies, and it's really basic what they're doing if you boil it down. Maybe not the really crazy ones way at tip of spear, but what the majority are doing are just running Lyft tests and calibrating channels. And it's not sexy. It's
I think it's always on Lyft tests is cool.
It's really fun. Important.
I've only personally seen that in a couple instances, but like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Like you have constant, basically as a marketer, a growth guy, you have constant ammo to go back to the CFO and be like, hey, like what's up? Like, no, this is, you know, this is real. Like this is not me just putting numbers in a spreadsheet. Okay. So we're going to wrap up. We got a couple quick things, but this conversation is part of a bigger initiative of your guys, as I understand it. So what stuff are you publishing? What, you know, mini case study? What do you have on this topic in the coming months?
Yeah, so later this month, your Facebook team will have more information about kind of this value journey. Next year, we're going to, early on in the year, go out with something more formal. But really what this is, and it's really interesting, is we've studied thousands of advertisers, and we've mapped those advertisers from the beginning of their journey to the most sophisticated. And we've mapped out by as basic as business need to measurement, to the signals, to every aspect of their campaign, how have they gone from a very basic marketer to being the most sophisticated? And as Jack said, it doesn't start by being a basic marketer and then rushing to LTV. That just blows up and doesn't work. But right. What this grid will help us do is it'll help you incrementally test the different levers as you become more sophisticated and as your business grows.
Okay. Gentlemen, this was awesome. Thank you. We all look forward to whatever materials, this aforementioned grid and all this initiative that you guys are pushing. And perhaps in a subsequent conversation, we'll go deeper on incrementality and Lyft, as I think there's much more to say there, practically speaking. But once again, thank you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for Facebook's Value Playbook debuting in the coming weeks. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll catch you on the next episode of MAU Talk.